Hi, I'm Matt Lee.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos
and talk about it.
Thank you guys so much once again for tuning into the world's only Sopranos podcast. Just a reminder, 5 stars in a review because... we're getting distracted by Mike is showing his no video screen on Zoom, and it looks like he's eating. I don't know what he's eating, man.
Like he's angrily eating maybe some
a cake
marinade. I don't know.
Yeah,
is it too early to talk? I want to talk now. listening to the.
I would like to know what you're licking there.
It's birthday cake. It's a birthday
See,
cake.
I thought it was cake. Okay. All right. Anyways, give us 5 stars and a review on on Spotify and on the Apple podcast app. And also just start texting your friends our podcast and it'll just show up in their Apple podcast app. It's a thing. Just a reminder that Charlie Penner and Jason, the $100 patrons, have the biggest, most massive dicks in the world, filled with veins, veinier than a Snickers bar, and twice as tasty.
Mm.
So
so chocolatey.
Yummy chocolate.
Full of nougat. Nougat.
Nougat. And I also, I'm allergic to peanuts, so I got to have the almond one, you know?
Yeah.
And next week we're doing our mailbag episode. Get your questions in right now, frockcast@gmail.com. Also the voicemail number 415-275-0030. Did I get that right? Vince?
What?
I said the voicemail number. Did I get it right?
Sorry. I dissociated for a second there. Sounded like you did.
All right. Anyways, next week. So get all your questions in and do it now. All right. Today, Vince and I and a guest are going to be talking about from season 6B of The Sopranos, episode 6, Kennedy and Heidi. And our guest today is a returning.
Matt, did you say a guest?
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you so much. Okay. Hold on.
Not yet.
We're having you.
You know him. From the Dynamic Banter podcast, as well as his hit show, live show Surrounded, which is going to be at the Netflix is a Joke Festival coming up in Los Angeles very soon.
So much for having me.
Welcome back, the incredible Mike Falzone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you decided to pod with us once more to talk about your love of Sopranos and your Italian heritage.
Yes, thank you so much for letting me be here again. I didn't have any plans today.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that you guys asked me to do this, or I don't know where I'd be. So I want to thank you guys for saving my life today.
Oh shit. No pressure.
No problem, dude.
Yeah, we're happy to have you on. If you're ever feeling, that way again, just call us up. We'll talk Sopranos with you. We may not pod it, but we could just talk about it.
Well, I'm, like we talked about kind of off air, I'm here for advancing my career.
That's right.
So if we're not going to record our conversation and make clips out of it or whatever,
make content,
I'm not super interested, but don't take that personally.
No,
I'm
just get it.
Out here grinding.
Yeah, no, what is the point? If you're not making content, you either get busy making content or you get busy dying.
Or you're dead.
Dude. You either live long enough to, if you either die a content creator or live long enough to
get canceled.
Yeah, that works.
Ain't that the truth?
Ain't it the truth? Anyways, these goddamn woke. All right, I'm done. Listen, creating content is a great life, and there's nothing wrong with it. And
it's the world's oldest profession.
Half of the reason. How dare you? We are not prostitutes because, I guess we are. But I have the reason I was excited to talk about for Francesca to announce the pregnancy was because I was like, I got so much content I want to make. And she was like, our future daughter is not content. And I was like, well, I don't think you understand what this life you chose is about.
Also, babe. Like, I can't believe like we're almost done with this season. Like, we're going to be done with the season before you have a child, which is a shame because like you could, like this whole time you could have been saying extremely racist things about Italians. And then when someone calls you on it, you'd be like, actually, I have an Italian daughter.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Actually, it's a bad timing and bad planning on your guys' part.
Yeah, we should have planned it out. What I can say, excuse me, but my fetus is a quarter Italian. So
you can't say that, but it really
doesn't have the same.
I don't know. You got to say it in the right circles, I think. Also, I want to say congratulations because we haven't talked since then. Congratulations to
you,
and your beautiful life partner.
Yeah.
But I also want to say that I'm congratulating you, especially on your future content and not
thank
necessarily
you.
Like everyone. It's not hard to make a person. So many,
yes.
Like my parents made a person.
Easy.
Big deal. But you guys are going to have so many likes coming your way. And
I know
that's really special.
Yeah.
That's the hope, man. That's the hope. I mean, I feel like every time a baby is born, it's just like roll the dice. Is this going to be an influencer baby or not? You know, is this baby going to have like the hashtag engagement that you want?
That's what I'm saying. You know? That's specifically what I'm saying. It's so hard to find, like, are you putting this in front of the right people with the hashtags?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so I hope, I wish that strength for you, that strength and clarity to pick all the right hashtags.
I mean, bless, dude. Thank you.
I want you to find the right rat hole to wave your cheese in front of.
Exactly, dude. I want to find that rat hole. I want them to eat the cheese. I want to make those rats nice and fat.
May the rats eat the cheese.
Yeah.
May the rats eat the cheese.
Yeah.
Salud.
Don't they say that in one of these episodes?
They do. They go, may the rats eat the cheese.
That's Ratatouille, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another, I get these two things mixed up.
It's a common mistake.
Yeah, they're similar. Speaking of which, what is your favorite animal from The Sopranos?
That goat that time.
Yeah, that goat was really good. That was a good goat. Also, are you a fan of the, you like
No,
the
you asked a good question this week. That was a good question. Leave it at that, I feel like.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
No, ruin it.
All right. I like that. That's good. I never thought about that. Just quitting while I'm ahead?
Yeah. That's what I say.
Wow. All right. Well... This is not a podcast about quitting while we're ahead. No, this is a podcast about The Sopranos. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Fuck yeah! All right. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, today we are going to be talking about from season 6B of The Sopranos, episode 6. Kennedy and Heidi, which premiered on May 13th, 2007. Vince, break us off a little piece of that IMDb synopsis.
Oh, man. I mean, this is going to be a real easy one because it's only 9 words.
Oh, hell yeah.
Tony travels to Las Vegas after a tragedy occurs.
Well,
not
wrong. Not wrong.
Not wrong. Yeah. Very matter
accurate
of fact.
And I like the, you know, the word economy on that's pretty good.
Not bad.
But what was happening at the time that this episode came out, Vince?
Oh, I think what you're trying to say, Matt, is that we cannot evaluate art divorced from the culture in which it was produced. We need to add that cultural context back, and for that we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk Remember.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
sorry.
Did you remix that today?
No, I was following your hand signal for some reason, and I paused it when you went down. I'm really easy to conduct.
Yeah, no, never pause when I go down.
I was in band. Go ahead.
So for the Remember When machine, we're traveling all the way back, taking the time machine to May 13th, 2007, a glorious year.
Sure.
You know, I was just chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool. A couple of things.
Some b-ball outside of the school.
Yep, finish line. There were some things that were happening in the world at that point, such as NATO confirmed that Mullah Dadullah, the foremost military leader of the Taliban,
Mullah Dadullah,
had been killed in a battle.
Oh, holla, Mullah Dadullah legs go.
Damn.
Mullah Dadullah sounds like what?
What'd you say your fetus was again?
it really does sound like a racist person like making fun of Arabic.
It does. Mullah Dadullah sounds like what like South Park did every time they had someone doing Arabic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we could stop.
It's got good mouthfeel. Is all I'm saying.
It is fun.
Not
to do.
Racistly.
I just want to say for the record, I wasn't part of this conversation. I think the video will show that.
He's literally crying right now.
Yeah.
So
he has replaced his screen on Zoom with a black box. It's crazy.
Yeah. That's true. Just back to him licking cake.
I was licking cake this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't even hear it.
Other
so
things.
Mullah Dadullah's gone.
Mullah Dadullah, RIP to a real one, been killed in battle. Other things that happened, Bob Barker was about to retire. This was his send-off week on CBS from The Price is Right.
Yeah, I remember him. I remember that was the whole thing. They were like, oh, he's gone. And it was like, cool. I mean, you know, celebrate his shit. That's tight.
Do you guys have Pluto TV?
I do.
There is a channel on Pluto TV that shows Price is Right 24/7.
Pluto TV is weird because it's like one of those things where it looks like a TV like menu, right? It looks like, you know, you go into your Spectrum fucking guide and whatnot,
but really it's Price is Right and Grace Under Fire.
Yeah but then you like I remember I was like, oh, CNN's on here, that's weird, I'll just watch CNN. And they were playing this thing about like, you know, some lady in Ukraine was like, this is where the soldiers came and stuff. And I was like, okay. And then like 10 minutes of commercials played and then the same clip happened. And I was just like,
it is one of those things.
Wait a minute. This isn't TV. This is just a bunch of commercials for TV.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine, but you know, that's a lot.
So Bob Barker was retiring. Do you guys remember when he died?
I know.
Bob Barker is dead.
That's a trick question. He's still alive. 98
he is still
years
alive, dude.
Young. I think he could have hosted the show 10 years longer, you know?
I know.
He was 60 in the 70s.
I know. He was
so old.
He was old in Happy Gilmore.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, wow.
And
like
that was the joke.
That was the joke.
It was
like, he's so strong. Wow. You wouldn't expect it from an old man who's about to die. This dude is outliving everyone. And no one celebrates him the way they celebrated Betty White, you know?
That's not true. That's not true. You wait until Bob Barker dies.
Yeah. I mean, they will celebrate him, but I'm saying like in life, I feel like people were looking at Betty White every day that she was alive and they were like, go, 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 you know, just they want to see how long she'd last. It's and then
crawling towards the finish line for 99 years.
So close to 100.
Bob Barker's kind of like the male Betty White.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, they're both,
sexy as fuck.
Sexy, funny,
stacked.
Incredibly old, stacked. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He had a tiny microphone. That's what I always remember about Bob Barker.
That's because that
he was the only television host that chose to use like a microphone that had just like a little smaller
little
than
stick.
A ping pong ball thing on the end. Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah. He didn't know what to do with his hands.
It made his dick look bigger.
Oh, that makes
sense.
That's
true. Yeah, that's 100% true.
Other things that were happening back in May 13th, 2007. You know, Entourage was in the middle of its run.
And, great show.
One of the listings for this week, the episode's called Turtle Love. Eric and Vince are determined to get the movie Medellin off the ground, but the rights to the script stand in their way. Feeling tense the day of the Five Towns premiere, Drama seeks relief at a massage parlor, but can't avoid daily variety. At the auto body shop, Turtle meets a girl who shares his love for limited edition sneakers, but her overbearing father hampers his game.
Dude, is that the one where Vince suffocates Turtle after they get in that car accident?
That honestly would have fit so well in that show. Because like Turtle's the driver, you know? Yeah. And then just like flips the car around and then, oh my God.
He was distracted by some limited edition sneakers.
Yeah.
Are those sneakers?
Yeah.
Who knew that like Turtle would usher in like an entire personality type of guys whose entire personality is sneakers?
Yeah, well, I feel like that's been a personality type for a while, and he was just kind of like another iteration of that. The weird thing is, who'd have thought that being like a, what is it called, like a hype beast, or you know, someone who loves shoes is like still
a sneaker bitch.
Bitch. That's still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
Who'd have thought?
Dude, he's there's the most more sneaker relevant. Stores than ever.
Yeah, and people line up for them and shit. It's like it's crazy. I just wear one pair of shoes the whole time, but I also get made fun of a lot by
you have to choose one or the other.
That's what I say. Yeah. Can't.
You're not a hype beast. You're more of like a simp queen.
Yeah,
you are a simp queen.
Mm-hmm. I am a simp queen. That's so true, dude.
Hashtag simp queen.
Hashtag simp queen.
This Fetty week also saw the release of Georgia Rule, which you know was supposed to be a capper to Lindsay Lohan's sort of fame as a tabloid person starring alongside Felicity Huffman and Jane Fonda. Instead, it was a big flop. I got Rex Reed's review because if you read any review in the past, you always want to read Rex Reed because he's just like a, I don't know, he's Rex Reed. He's a singular critic in the landscape.
Explain Rex Reed. What is he?
I'm trying to think of a, well, I guess you would call him sort of like a dishy queen.
Okay. I was like,
he's that guy from Wayne's World who threw the confetti out of the bucket.
I think that was him. Rip Taylor. Who's great.
And I know where you're going. You're confusing Rip Taylor with who's that other?
Rip Torn?
No. The critic who kind of sounds
Rex
like.
Manning.
No, he sounds like Rip Taylor. He's like famous,
he
gay,
looks like
kind
him.
Of fat. The most famous TV
Gene Shalit?
Critic. Gene Shalit.
Gene Shalit is not fat. Gene Shalit is very svelte. He just has
he
a big
fat?
Mustache.
I like how we've said 10 names.
Uh-huh.
And we each know like two of the people that we're talking. We just know the people we brought to the conversation, but nothing outside of that.
There's another guy then. I wish, is there like one of those things like if you like Gene Shalit, you'll love. And
like
then,
a thesaurus for people.
Yeah, I mean a thesaurus for people.
Like Spotify for historical figures.
Yeah.
What does it sound like?
So I just wanted to read a little bit of Rex Reed's review of Georgia Rule. Jane Fonda can do just about anything, but first you have to give her something to do. A dismal abomination called Georgia Rule gives her nothing more than a slap in the face.
Jane Fonda can do anything. Just give her something to eat. Make sure she's all juiced up.
Got food.
Wait, what was that? Brent.
Brent. Am I not muted?
No. Brent, did that make you laugh, or were you getting like chips or something?
No, there's a dog here that's begging for food that I but I'm not gonna give her any food.
Damn,
oh,
I thought
right.
I made Brent laugh.
I thought
that's why I'm here.
I could tell just from my ears.
Brent, have I been unmuted this whole time? I'm very sorry.
Yeah, we
didn't know until just now.
All of the racial slurs you've just been. All right, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
A dismal abomination called Georgia Rule gives her nothing more than a slap in the face, and the face that can still stop traffic hasn't been photographed very flatteringly to begin with. At her age, I can understand her interest in dipping one of her pedicured toes in the acting business just for the sake of argument. But after winning every award in her profession, she's got nothing left to prove. Plus, she's smart, beautiful, wise, and knows how to read a script, just in case something worth doing comes along. Georgia Rule is nothing worth doing and is most assuredly nothing worth seeing. Worse, the sight of Jane Fonda stooping to the level of co-starring with Lindsay Lohan is enough to make you give up on movies from now until reincarnation. Damn, this movie is so bad, people are taking bets to see how long they can stay awake without snoring.
I mean,
that's kind of a stupid bet.
Yeah, I mean, that's like...
Hold on, he's got a few
more. I would just fake it.
He's got a few
more.
No one
checked to see if that was a stupid bet?
Yeah. People be making bad bets in movie theaters.
He's got a few more of these amazing sentence constructions. Okay, Gary Marshall once directed something called Pretty Woman. Almost everything since then has turned to bile. It's not easy, but now he's even managed to make Jane Fonda look like Alpo.
That's dog food.
Dude, whatever. It's all, nothing means anything, but critics have such a self-important way of writing anything, and it really makes me not give a shit about anyone's opinion on anything. Every critic I've ever read makes me not give a shit about anyone's opinion about anything in the world.
Vince is a film critic, and you've just insulted his entire industry.
Vince gets it.
No, I
Vince
agree.
Vince gets it.
I agree with that.
You know what? I think we could still respect each other as people, and I like Vince very much for as much as I know about him. But that doesn't make... We could be best friends, and that wouldn't make what I said untrue.
I mean, this is from the era of... I mean, I feel like Rex Reed is the original self-important critic, and that's part of his charm.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll say that.
And charm is subjective, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I didn't choose him because I thought he was a great guy to read. I'll put it that way. Meanwhile, the New York Post raves, and this is just a headline, It Blow Hands.
Wow. I feel like
that's poetry.
Exactly. That's poetry right there. There's like, you don't need all those words to just say an amazing pun. You know,
I just wanted to read that because it came from an era when critics could still just say that the actress looked like dog food. And that was like, that was cool to write.
Yeah.
Not immediately get fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I do miss the era in which we all just accepted that, like, if you're super duper duper famous, then there's going to be some catty queens who are going to say that you look like a dumpster fire, you know?
Yeah, but you know now I mean? It's everybody, you know, because just it was like critics had a column in the thing that you would read.
Right.
And now everyone has the internet, so everyone is the critic.
True. That's
so it
true.
Makes like it makes that less special.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Everyone sounds like that now. So if a professional sounds like that, then they get in trouble.
It also I feel like the pendulum has swung back the other way so far now, where it's like not only can you not discuss an actor's appearance at all, there's gonna be like five articles about like Renee Zellweger where she's just like, I can't believe people have the audacity to not recognize her anymore. And it's like, I don't think people were like criticizing her face or like body so much as they were like confused by how she looked now. Like,
she had like facial reconstructive surgery or something.
Why is it not okay to, if that's your genuine reaction as a person, that I didn't recognize that person? Why does that make you bad?
I mean,
because you are trashing. Women are under so much pressure already, and for you to say that, it just contributes to an environment of pressure.
If I had surgery to put my nose on the back of my head, do you think you would take an extra second look at me? Next
I would
time
never.
I was on the podcast?
No, I'd be like, you have always had your nose on the back of your head,
and that's why you're a hero.
That's why I'm a hero.
I feel like in like the last three reviews, I've had to go out of my way. Not to point out how weird Nicole Kidman looks nowadays.
I mean,
can notice that.
Yeah.
You're a person. You can notice. Dude, it's okay. You do whatever the fuck
she's
you want
still
with
hot.
Your money.
It just, she looks different.
And everything is subjective.
Exactly.
That's right. I felt like this era was right on the upswing of know-nothing, like style gurus or like tech gurus, like people that were just, they had fake job titles and they were attached to famous people and they just said like vague crazy shit. And then the famous person would be like, oh yeah, that's my guy. He's like responsible for everything that I do. So I found this story. Hillary Clinton keeps corporate advisor. Add another consultant to the list of those advising Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. John Cao, a corporate communications consultant who is based in San Francisco and advocates using the techniques of musical improvisation to get the creative juices flowing and leave competitors in the dust.
Oh, what?
That's my music improv guy.
that could be your job, Matt.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, it's like, oh, this is my musical improv guy who just occasionally goes, drop a beat.
Dude, she has one guy who follows her around. Like, you seem kind of stressed. You ever listen to improvisational jazz?
And what she's a like, bitch. This is LA Matt.
Yeah. Flap, but we flap, only flap have in the ass with that cat. I'm Hillary Clinton and my wife, my husband is Bill. Everyone knows I'll rule the whole world.
Dude, there's only four seats in the car. And there's like five advisors with her. And she's like, Jeff, you stay here for now.
Yeah.
But I'm the financial. I'm the small business
No,
guy.
I need my singer.
Scooby the beatbox. Yeah. Get in the car, James.
Senator Clinton paid Mr. Cao $70,000 to advise her during her Senate reelection campaign in 2006. But the payment did not appear in her financial filings until the first quarter of this year.
This is a front.
Lock her up.
Yeah.
Howard Wolfson said that Mr. Cao was continuing to advise Mrs. Clinton without pay in her presidential bid.
He was continually making kind of a trumpet noise.
was continuing to advise Mrs. Clinton on issues of innovation and how America competes in the 21st century market. The two met in 2004 as part of a Defense Department advisory group to help the military think creatively about transformation, leadership, and other issues. Mr.
Cao, you guys have any tanks that turned into big robots? You ever think about that?
Mr. Cao, who has taught at Harvard Business School, is the author of Jamming, the Art and Discipline of Corporate Creativity. In which he explains how members of a work team can adapt the principles of improvisational music to collaborate at a higher, more creative level, a process he calls getting to cool.
Oh, I love it.
Hell yeah, nothing cooler, nothing cooler than being forced into a conference room and then having someone drop a beat, and then you just go, I'm in HR and I'm here to say it's not cool when you call your coworker gay.
Dude, that's beautiful. That's exactly what I was, they're all in the conference room and he comes and he goes, why do you think I'm snapping right now?
Yeah.
Why do you think I'm snapping right now, Janice? And they all say their grievances. I don't like
sexual harassment.
Don't clean out the microwave.
Microwaving fish.
In his transformation manifesto, Mr. Cao suggests hiring a quote chief destruction officer instead of a chief innovation officer. Organizations, he says, must ruthlessly trash outmoded obstructions to creativity, including quote a confining brand image unquote and quote revered memories of old successes.
Somebody nuke these bad vibes.
Yeah. Kill the vibes. Make new vibes in its place. They'll grow like vibe trees. And we'll all just...
You got to plant a vibe if you destroy a vibe.
Exactly. It's one for one. I love that.
Vibes can neither be created nor destroyed. There's a finite number of them.
That's so true, dude. I like that this person is fucking... he is, of all the people to be advising, it's Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, just like, I need a fun singer guy. And he's like, well, you... Jeffrey Epstein, skibbidi-bidi, yum bada joke, yum bada joke,
skibbidi-bidi. I love hot sauce.
Top movies in the country, Spider-Man 3, followed by 28 Weeks Later, followed by Georgia Rule, as we've heard.
Oh, yeah.
Disturbia, and of course, Delta Farce, which I believe... starred
Larry the Cable Guy?
Yeah, as we all know and love. The top pop songs in the country where nope, that's a Top Rock song. Top Rock song is still
the Cable Guys,
is still Breath by Breaking Benjamin.
And Breath.
Yeah, and the top pop song is still Makes Me Wonder by Maroon 5.
Gross.
Yeah.
All right.
Maroon 5, man. They were, what a treat they were.
Mm, yeah. Gosh, R.I.P. Yeah. I'm so sad that they died in that semi truck accident.
Damn, dude. At the beginning of this episode.
Yeah, just now. Well, so that's what was going on.
Probably
at
up
the
there
time.
Partying with Mulla Dadulla.
Maroon Mulla Dadulla.
Mulla Dadulla 5.
Chris D'Elia Dadulla. All right. We're just having fun now. Okay, so that was what was going on. Now let's get into the episode. Vince, you read the wonderful synopsis, you know, nice and short. Well, unfortunately, my synopsis is a little bit longer.
and sounds like fortunate, something fortunate to me.
Well, we'll see.
I feel like a real fortunate son right now, Matt. Isn't that right?
Nope, that's not it at all.
2, 3, 4.
Some folks were born made to die in a car. All right, here, like, so dumb. All right, here it is.
Ooh, you eat the gabagool.
Sorry.
Hello. You can't dump asbestos in there. First, you gotta pay off Brooklyn. Pay off Ilia Tardo. Come on.
It's comfortably numb.
I know you're feeling old, but Chrissy's acting strange. He looks like he's on cocaine.
Yeah, bitch.
Relax. He just needs to change the station first to the departed soundtrack. Tony yells and Chrissy swerves.
Yeah, bitch. It's about the car accident.
A distant headlight on the horizon. Tony almost dials 911. Chrissy looks high, and Tony, he hangs up. Chrissy was like his child till he wrote Cleaver. Now Tony sees Chris for what he is. Across to bear, he sees her all alone.
All right.
Chris sees nose.
All right.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful harmony.
Has succumbed to blood in his lungs.
He has succumbed to blood in his lungs.
Very, very good.
All right. Well, so that was the Bada B story. You of course can listen to the whole thing at the very end of the episode. That was what happened.
I've always said Pink Floyd songs the perfect length to parody because they're so short and punchy. You know,
Dude.
I just really wanted to do it. It's such a good song. I feel like I just wanted to destroy something beautiful. You know,
I thought it was great.
Thank you. All right. So let's get into this episode first with some general thoughts of this episode. Vince, what did you think?
I mean, I feel like they're really starting to tie up loose ends. And they did a pretty wonderful job of it. We've been watching Christopher's downward spiral for most of the season. And what a death scene. I think that was pretty brilliant on most levels, you know, and then you got Tony's weird sojourn to Las Vegas. Sure.
His fucking ayahuasca vision quest. I mean, love that.
Look, before the show is going to end soon. So David Chase has got to get his Buddhist bullshit in there somehow.
That's true.
And he's going to do it, whether it takes peyote buttons or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Mike, did you like this episode?
Yes, very much. Yeah. It's hard for me to not like a Sopranos episode, and I haven't watched that many of them. I think last time I watched was last time I was with you guys. Mm-hmm. So I've been, you know, skipping around. You feel kind of detached from the long arcing storylines, but it has everything a good Sopranos episode has. It's like the crazy drama and then the things that are like laughable, and has the you know, goofy henchmen one-liners. It has everything.
It's got good jokes, it's got good death.
Asbestos. It's got a fireproof episode.
It is. That's right. It's got a symbolism with asbestos, all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
I too love this episode. I remember the first time I saw this. This is around the time that I actually, I think, started watching the show as it was coming out. I think I don't know. It feels like, because I have a very like distinct memory of sitting around and watching Chrissy's death scene. And going like, this is a dream sequence or something, right? Mm. Like this is, there's no way this is real. And I kind of loved that it was real, because it was, it made it seem like the entire weird dream sequences that they've had throughout this entire series were made specifically for this moment, so you would think there's no way this can be real. Mm. There's no way this can be real. And then to have it actually happen, I was like, damn.
I think they're doing, you know, we could say they're doing an art with the direction in this, but it definitely has a slightly different look than other Sopranos episodes. I noticed that there's about, like, at first it starts in the car scene with Tony and Christopher. Like, they're shot like slightly closer up than they usually frame them, and that sort of continues like to Tony and Melfi when they're doing the therapy scenes.
Like
they have the normal Soprano shot, which is them framed from about the waist up, and then there's like an extra one where it's just chest up, which they haven't really done in past episodes that I've noticed.
I didn't really notice the specifically why it looked and felt off kilter, but I think that's a decent explanation.
So I don't know if they were trying to do an art where they're like, oh, we're getting you know, further inside these characters as they go along.
Oh, shit.
Or if it was just accidental.
Nah, dude, that was probably the art. They probably were doing art.
I choose to think about it like that as well.
I like to think about the art. So we open with this asbestos storyline. A trucker is attempting to dump asbestos at a dump, and then he's told he's not allowed to dump there anymore.
Which I feel like is part of the final episode push to really remind you that these people are not good people. Like, he's really trying to hammer it home, whether it's AJ or Tony or even Carmella a little bit. He wants you, if you leave with one takeaway from the show, it's that these are not good people. This is not a victimless crime in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
He is actually dumping carcinogens in the water supply.
Right, yeah. Just dumping asbestos wherever, and like the biggest like issue that they have around it is who's gonna get 25% of the take, as opposed to like all the COPD and cancer that's gonna spread wildly because some construction people wanted to cut corners. And it's also, I don't know, it feels a little bit like, again, another art. It's like I mean, like, half of it is just remembering that at its core, the whole like New Jersey Mafia's like biggest money making grift at this point was the money they're stealing from trash, from waste management. And so they're bringing you back to that. But then also asbestos in general, if I'm going to put on my symbolism cap real quick. Like,
would you say it's like a rot at the heart of the American dream?
Dude, that's right.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's that rot.
Let me do that again. Would you say it's like a rot at the heart of the American experiment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I like that take better.
Yeah.
Because you said experiment.
That's right.
But no, I think it's like, you know, this is, it's this weird kind of, I don't know, esoteric ticky-tack crime. Where you're kind of like, okay, who the fuck cares about it? It's not like flashy and cool, like, oh, we're gonna steal a bunch of diamonds or whatever. But the consequences of just getting a little bit of asbestos in your lungs is ginormous. It's a giant cancer, and that
it
cancer
affects
is
so many other people.
Yeah, and it's that rot. It's the you know, it's that rot at the
oh,
center.
Oh, so like
the,
it rot like cancer rot, rot body. Like,
it's inside a body. You know, oh, okay. I got feelings about art. Anyways,
I think this is a particularly like good illustration of just the way the mafia sort of works, where it's just a combination of many small shady ways to make money. So it's like,
right,
okay, if you get a few garbage truck routes and then someone else gets the contract to take the asbestos out of a building and they know each other, the person who takes the asbestos out can then dump the asbestos illegally at the dump that you also, it's just like running like two or three things. You can easily just add
right.
some graph to that and no one
right. Like it's a weird skim that shouldn't, you almost think it shouldn't matter, but then you're like, no, this is actually,
somebody needs to be watching this.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone yeah. should like, you know, it's you go like, I no, the EPA is right. it's like a show like, you know, that has to do with like criminals and crime. You forget that like there are some federal agencies that are correct, and the EPA is one of them. And yeah, I have a clip of just the asbestos scene.
Stop dumping!
What does matter?
Lawyer bed! You can't dump here anymore. You need to talk to your boss.
Always we are dumping here.
Caballero, put the shit back in your truck.
What? That is huge job.
I really do love Big Russian, you know, like a garbage man. Just what is matter? Like, I know it was written that way, is I think what I'm saying, and I enjoy. They're like, okay, so you're like a Russian immigrant, and you're just saying you don't even know English,
and
bro.
And the actor is like, Russian. Russian. Like, what is joke like that?
Yeah, he's practicing in the mirror.
There was probably a guy on set who was like, listen, if we just do like this improvisational music thing, we're gonna finish writing this whole scene and it's gonna be amazing. Like, here I'm just gonna
yes,
this is huge job.
I kept thinking when they were when they were dumping all that stuff is everyone in that scene is dead now.
Right.
The kid eating the sandwich, everyone without any kind of protection on, they're all dead.
Yeah. That kid eating the sandwich was, that's more symbolism, dude. It's like, do you know what's in your food and in your air? And it's asbestos. And it's like, it's the mafia, bro. That's what's in it.
He's like, hey man,
it's in all of us.
You're getting asbestos all over my microplastics. Trying to eat over here.
Yeah. Ew. So then we cut to Tony and Chris are meeting at a, you know, wherever their meeting spot is near the Statue of Liberty. They're meeting up with Phil and Butchie, and he's saying like, hey, you know, if you want to dump asbestos, you got to pay me 25%. And they're arguing about it, and they kind of leave on bad terms. And it's funny because this is a silly little thing that's going to have big, big consequences later in the series for the last few episodes. So as Tony and Chris are driving and they're just talking about like how whether or not they should meet Phil's number, Tony is saying he doesn't want to because it's terrible precedent. And Chris is saying you should stop and smell the roses. And he calls... He calls Phil the flying ointment, which is a nice malapropism where it's just like
he's the flying ointment, you know.
Well, that's the fly. It reminded me of when my coworker years ago used to say that's a catch 22 of it to everything that was not a catch 22.
It's a double sided 22.
That's a double sided 22 of it. Oh, she also used to say, being that it's May instead of be that as it may. And so I feel like I love this level of malapropism where you go, the flying ointment. Meanwhile,
he's also my favorite wrestler back in the day.
Yeah, the Flash.
That is a great wrestler name.
That is a really good.
He's greasy. He's jumping
he's real
off
slippery.
Stuff.
Yeah, you just can't grab him. No, every time you try to do a suplex, he just slips through your fingers.
Trying to grab onto tough. Vaseline, you don't know.
He's like those tubes you get at like Spencer's Gifts. You can never hold them. You know what I'm talking about? Uh-huh. The flying ointment can never be caught.
Did you ever fuck like one that. Of those, Matt?
I would have, but it had a it had these little plastic fish in them that had like sharp fins.
Yeah, you want that. I was like, you want a nice soft fish's mouth.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to, you know, get my dick cut with plastic fish. Mm-hmm. Anyways, meanwhile, Chris keeps changing the song over and over, keeps changing the channel of the radio.
He seems agitated.
He seems
out of it and agitated. So
tweaking on something.
His the agitation seems very Coke-like, but the rest of his affect, like Coke strikes me as like a hyper-focus drug. Yeah. And then Chris's problem in this whole scene is that he's like very distracted and only half paying attention to everything. Made me wonder, I assumed he was on heroin until they brought up cocaine later.
Yeah, I had the same thought, I think, early on. And then when they're like, you find out that he had cocaine in his system, I was just like, oh, okay. Because it kind of looked like he was jumpy, but also they kept having these like close shots where he looks like he's nodding out. And I was like, I don't know what they're trying to do here. But apparently Tony like notices or whatever and is looking at him strangely, and he puts on the Departed soundtrack, which I really enjoy. They're listening to the Departed soundtrack, and it looks like Chris is fucking high as a kite.
Wasn't Shipping Up to Boston from the Departed soundtrack?
It was.
I can't believe that wasn't the song they were listening to.
You can't die to Shipping Up to Boston. I'm a sailor, Pesh, and I lost my leg. Yeah, that would have been.
You know why
the system has no balls.
You know why that's the best Dropkick song? It's because it's the one where he sings the least in it.
Yeah, that's true. He does need to do less singing.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Then he gets into the accident, and I have a little clip.
What is this, make-believe ballroom? How many times are you going to change the station?
It's the Departed soundtrack. It's fucking killer. You got it?
Yeah, it's good.
Look, regarding Phil, I gotta ask. Whatever happened to Stop and Smell the Roses?
You're right. You can't fight every fucking battle, right? It's just that people like Phil... They're not on that page. Take those roses and stick them up your ass. Stones first. This system's got no balls.
Watch the road!
We need to go back, Heidi.
Kennedy, I'm on my learner's permit after dark.
Oh, man. First of all, that's Heidi and Kennedy.
Yeah.
Named after.
Named the whole episode after the people who like end up getting Chris killed is very funny to me.
Song choice, you know, one could argue it's a little on the nose. Not for nothing.
That was my first thought.
Comfortably Numb is definitely on the nose, but it's a very on the nose song, so you can't really put it in anything in which drugs are involved.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, then where does it fit in? The vibe is drugs, so sure. It's kind of.
It struck me as someone like that's what you write when you've never done drugs. I don't know right. anything yeah, about yeah, yeah. their, you know, but yeah. it's like playing Sublime or something
and smoking weed,
like yeah. playing a vague reggae song whenever yeah. weed is mentioned.
Yeah, and it's like, again, other than the fact that he says numb, that's not a very coke song. That's much more of a heroin song.
It's more of a heroin song too.
Other than your teeth being numb, like I feel like that's
Your teeth or your gums or whatever, but I don't know. What I felt about this was that like Chris as a former opiate addict, Chris relapsing and then dying because like his last drug being cocaine, that would be my biggest like fucking regret. Lay dying, I'd be like, I can't believe cocaine is the last thing I yeah. did. It's just because it's like it's not even fun. D, you know,
D, get the heroin out of my pocket, D.
Can you just put the spread needle in my arm,
spread my toes.
Yeah. I don't want anyone to know.
It was little Biggie went to market.
I feel bad for him because like that is to me is like that's the real tragedy of this is he didn't get to go out on his drug of choice. I mean,
I would love to die on cocaine.
No,
I'd be all jazzed up. I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'm gonna go yeah, start a restaurant in heaven.
I love this idea.
Yes, I want this for me. We're going to find out what death is like.
Dude, I love that. And you kind of get this throughout The Sopranos, but when Tony's looking back at the baby, like the destroyed baby's chair.
Yeah.
And you're kind of meant to think like, whoa, Tony's thinking about like that could have killed Chris's baby. Like what a good guy.
Yeah.
And then you just rewind your mind. Like 10 seconds before where he's dumping asbestos in that kid's sandwich.
Yes.
I feel like it would have been more in character for Tony if it was like a dog carrier or something like animal related. Cause
he crushed his sandwich I had in the back seat.
Yeah.
Was dreaming about that fucking lo mein all the way home.
Yeah.
And groceries.
Yeah, his Beijing beef is just thrown right out of the car. For that alone, he would murder. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I feel like the baby thing is just kind of serves to be this excuse that he has. You know, he has this kind of like love of babies, right? He does. It's like the two things he claims to love are like animals and babies, and and everything else he's, you know, he's, I don't know, doesn't really care for. So I do see it as like a likely excuse. I also like that the way he decides to kill him, because they're in the car and fucking Chris is fucked up. He didn't wear a seatbelt and he's bleeding out of the mouth. And he tells Tony straight up that he'll never pass a drug test.
Dude, can we talk about how his hat isn't off, but it is sideways?
Yeah. It's still there and it just says Cleaver, which for Tony is like he fucking hates Cleaver because Cleaver was the movie that Chris made basically calling Tony a piece of shit who slept with his fiance.
Right.
And it's actually interesting because this car wreck was very similar to the car wreck that he got into with Adriana.
I can't believe that.
That led to this whole thing.
Right. I can't believe Carmela never says like, Jesus Christ, how many fucking SUV rollover accidents are you going to be in? Like how many times can this happen to one guy?
Exactly. I
feel like this was a great death scene for Christopher.
Yeah.
And it only makes me wish that they hadn't used the same thing for Aid. But I mean, I guess they kind of wrote themselves into that corner too, well, where
no
they
one,
had
no
they
one
had to
died
get caught
with the Adriana thing,
right? But it's kind of the same thing. She like they flipped an SUV,
right? SUVs flip. I get it.
They do, but boy, that's a lot of SUV flipping for one guy.
It was a dramatic callback, and yeah. If you think about it, that flipped SUV is the reason why Chris and Tony's relationship started going downhill, because mm-hmm. everyone thought they were hooking up, when really they were just driving to go get cocaine.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they were probably going to hook up.
Yeah. They flipped the whole downhill. SUV yeah. flipping trope on its head, if you will.
Oh, there we go. And then, you know, we've got he's coughing up blood. He's, you know, breathing this like high wheeze. It's
usually a bad sign. If you see any movie yeah. or television show where someone's coughing up blood, you can be pretty much assured that that person's going to die at some point.
Yeah, right. When you got that subdermal hematoma, you know, that shit fuck you
no,
up.
No one ever just like coughs blood into a handkerchief and then is like, boy, yeah. I really need to buy a humidifier. I'm getting to.
And
yeah.
then that's
really...
that's all they say for the rest of the yeah. thing.
It's so dry here in fun? Albuquerque.
Oh, that was weird.
That was weird.
They just never get back to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so he ends up killing him. And the way he chooses to murder Chris, I think, is particularly important, because he plugs his nose so that he will drown in his own blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, first of all, I got to hand it to Tony. I'd have never thought to do that.
I mean, perfect nice. Crime. I mean, he's the most mad he could possibly be at Christopher, because Christopher has not only endangered himself, but he's almost killed Tony and symbolically is putting his child at risk.
The baby in danger.
And
yeah.
Tony's like, well, how can I get rid of this guy? Oh, boom. I in my mind, like, I remembered him strangling Christopher, and I was watching the scene being like, how does he get away with like strangling the guy? Cause they would see the marks on his neck or whatever. And then,
right.
I
even
forgot
still,
that he just pinched his nose. Like,
but even still, he calls 911 and then he's like, yeah. come quick. There's a car accident. Plus there's bloody fingerprints on this guy's
body. Yeah, I was just wiping his mouth a little bit. Don't worry about it. Oh, and his nose is always like that. I mean, him getting killed by his nose, like for Chrissy, that's just insult to injury, because that's mm-hmm. the one thing he's the most sensitive of, is everyone making fun of his nose because he has yeah. a big one. Yeah. And that being his literal vulnerability in that moment is like, oh, that sucks, dude.
I mean, also he's coughing up blood, and then like it looked like they gave him a broken nose, and I was kind of thinking like, if he had a broken nose, you probably wouldn't need like cover, like just blocking his nose probably wouldn't do anything, because he probably already can't breathe out of that if he's got a broken nose.
But would you be thinking that at that moment, like, would you think like, I wouldn't have thought to plug his nose to kill him. I don't know what I would have done.
Maybe undeviated his septum when he broke his nose, so he was breathing better.
Yeah, oh shit, yeah. That's true.
So he had to redeviate the septum with the fingers.
Yeah, he's like, I can smell again.
No. We need
miracle.
To get you redeviate. Yeah.
And he was all high on coke, so he couldn't even feel Tony touching his nose at that point.
And I think that also
is the perfect crime.
It's another art, because he's like, you know, keep your nose clean, and he never. Could so he closes his nose forever.
That's right.
Hey,
yeah.
How about
and your nose sleeps with the vision?
Yeah.
You got a sleepy nose.
You got a sleepy nose. Follow your nose.
Good night, nose.
cement nose. All right. Anyways, so he plugs his nose and fucking. Chrissy is coughing blood. He's not really putting up much of a fight, which I don't fully understand.
I
feel like
he can move very well at that point.
That's what I figured. His arms were broke or something. His hat was still on, but both of his arms were broke.
I thought maybe that was the case, but I don't know. It's just like his reaction to him. He just kind of is looking with his eyes, and then he just fucking dies. It's just like, it's so cold-blooded. The look in Tony's eyes when he's doing it, too, is just like, fuck you.
Notice he gives, like, before I understood the whole story, because, like I said, I'm just coming in the middle, he gives, like, a little millisecond smile.
Yeah.
And I was like, why is Tony so horny about killing Chris? And then you learn about, you know, the burden and stuff like that. So yeah. It's like a, more of a relief for him. But yeah. I thought that as on the nose and over the top as I thought some of the stuff was, like the comfortably numb, and I thought yeah. like the girls talking was kind of corny. Yeah. And as soon as I'm in my head about like, is this whole show cornier than I remember it being? Yeah. And then they give like the just the smallest split second of like a little smile and then yeah. Kind of realizing why he did that. I'm like, yeah. oh, this, that's why
yeah,
it was
yeah.
like a good show.
Yeah.
Cause it's like the incredibly, I don't know, it's weird to say, but relatable emotion of like, I am enjoying like this, something bad happened to everyone else. This is bad. But to me, this is such a huge burden that's been lifted. And I think honestly, that's like, if you guys have ever had anyone close to you die, there are some people, and it's fucked up as it is to say, who when they die, you're just like, thank you, God, because they either they were suffering or because they were continuing to harm themselves or others. And it's
or
like
just holding on and like having, you know, health issue after health yeah. issue kind of thing.
Especially yeah. with addicts, too, when because with addicts, you're waiting. You know, you're waiting for them to die, especially when it's someone that you love. You're just like, I know they're going to die and it's going to, I have to mentally prepare myself for it. And it's really, there's no place you can go to talk about the relief that you feel when that happens. Even as like horrible as that sounds, it's like there is, that's a real thing.
Or not even like an addict or somebody who is a bad person, but sometimes people just breathe weird.
yeah. Or they walk stupid. You know how when people just like kind of walk stupid and you're like,
or
God,
they eat loud.
Wish that guy would get hit by
loud.
A truck.
Yeah. And then when they die, they're like, well, this is a bummer for sure, but at least I'll never hear.
I'll never hear his nose whistle anymore.
Oh my God. Now I'm just sitting around thinking like, these are all things I do. And Francesca is, she's going to,
she creeps in from the side.
I'm trying to sleep one day and she just, her fucking fingers are on my nose.
Yeah.
Oh fuck. Yeah. It's yeah. So Chris dies. He is essentially murdered by Tony. And he is
at least an assist.
It's an assisted murder. He helped the car. And then he tells Carmella, and I have a clip.
Tony, is everything okay?
Are you sitting down? Serious?
Yes, I'm in bed.
Sweetheart, there's been an accident. Christopher's dead.
Oh, my God!
Come.
What happened?
I'll tell you in detail.
Are you okay?
I just banged my knee, you know, the one from high school. I'm fine, but it wasn't wearing a belt. Just get Alan Rita on the phone and get him started over there.
All right. Oh, my God, Tony, he's dead?
Yeah.
There's something
I
about
banged my knee, the yeah, one yeah. from high school.
Don't worry about my high school knee. It's fine, but Chris is dead.
It's so funny, dude.
Yeah.
The last one? No, you think about the other one.
Yeah, no. That was that was the one semester.
That's the one I hit on the
college.
Coffee table.
Yeah. Talking about, you know, the knee.
I was running to the kitchen because I forgot knee. The lo mein.
Anyway, I feel like we're not talking about the
The subject at hand is more important than my knee. Forget about my knee. Just quick shout out to Carmella for, or to Edie Falco playing Carmella. Well, just small moment to just say, an incredible actress once again. Just like her, like gasp is like
she sold
the shit out of it. She's just so fucking talented. And I do also like that when she says the words, "Oh my God, he's dead." He pauses and he goes, "Yeah." And it was this weird moment that I noticed.
What, are you going through a tunnel?
Yeah.
Clean the blood out of you.
It's all like, I'm the one who's been in an accident. You're the one who seems to not be able to comprehend simple phrases.
Sorry, am I not speaking clearly?
Yeah,
sorry, my knee was hurting for a second there, so I couldn't
Call me back on the landline. You know, we don't get good Metro GPS. So.
I got this new T-Mobile service. Sometimes I don't hear everything people say.
So in that moment, you know, I did wonder what that yeah was about. And then later, Carm and Tony have another conversation about the death of Chrissy. And what's interesting to me is that, like, this is another thing that is relatable and happens. When someone dies, all of a sudden, they're an angel. Everything about them is good. Their history is kind of rewritten, especially if they die in, like, you know, some sort of random tragic way. And Tony is just very annoyed by that because, like, for him, like, all of Chrissy's faults are a very important part of, like, why he feels... like, they're an important part of who Chrissy was. And so for him, he's just like, we all remember this guy's a piece of shit, right? So he just keeps trying to remind people that he's a piece of shit. And he's trying to find anyone who can relate to him
He won't open up. Like, he can't be the first one to say that, yeah, okay, technically I was a little bit relieved by that. Because it would, like, implicate him because he actually killed him. I think, like, the relatable emotion is the relief. But, like, the thing with particularly Tony is that he actually killed him.
Yeah.
And he can't admit the human emotion because it, like, literally implicates him in a crime.
True. He's pleading the fifth on...
What happened? The car plugged up his nose.
Well, we got into a crash, and then he said, P.U., this stinks, and he pinched his nose.
You know, Chrissy was always...
not that serious.
He always had problems breathing out of that schnoz. You know, I don't have to tell you. It's probably what killed him.
Yeah. Anyways,
his nose went to sleep. His nose just stopped working at the last moment. It's a tragedy.
Yikes.
I have the clip of Carm and Tony talking.
When I called you that night after the accident, you asked me, oh my God, Tony, he's dead?
Yeah.
When I thought I picked up a twinge of relief.
What?
It just seemed like, I don't know.
How could you even say that? You don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. I'm wrong.
Maybe if you did pick up something like that, maybe it's because I was relieved that it was him and not you.
I don't feel bad about that. That makes sense.
No. You're not getting what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's good. That is good. You felt relief for that, but also a little bit for the fact that he's dead.
Dude, no? I love that. And I love that she's like, no, how could you dare say that?
Yeah.
There's two very Italian things that happen, like Italian-American things. It's the mom being like, how could you ever say that? And if you heard that, it's probably because it's true.
How dare you? Yes, it's true.
Dude, I don't want to jump around too much if it gets ahead of where you guys are going to be. But there's another it just struck me as a very, like, true to life thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's when they're talking to Chrissy's fiance's dad.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, like,
yes,
you know, no wonder he's in the, and he goes, no wonder they flipped the car. He's a wackadoo or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that is, I've had conversations like that with family at wakes where everyone's around and everyone's crying and, like, recounting all these beautiful moments in life. And then there's always one or two people being like, yeah, but he was scumbaddy. It's a little bit, you know.
I love that there's always
the only one.
An Italian-American slang word that always fully describes a reason why someone was dead. It's like, yeah. Well, I mean, he was a fucking jadrool, you know.
Yeah.
I
think we can all agree.
I think we can all agree. I have a clip of that.
They found cocaine in his blood.
Madonna.
Cause of death was a hemothorax.
Yeah, airbags can crush the ribs when there's no other restraint.
Shut up, Lisa.
They said he
might
have made it, but he didn't.
Couldn't have worn his goddamn seatbelt.
Al.
No wonder he was wackadoo.
Al, stop it.
Abalone. Yeah. Dude. These are granddaughter fatherless.
Hey, it was wackadoo.
He was wackadoo. Ah, baloney.
Ah, baloney, wackadoodle.
This guy was filled with Capricola.
But yeah, it is. It's definitely like a little bit of. It's, you're right. It's a perfect crime because, like, literally, he's got cocaine in his system. They got into a car wreck.
He's not wearing a seatbelt. I mean, if anybody you know dies in a car wreck and you find out they're not wearing a seatbelt, you're not going to be a little bit pissed. I'd be a little bit pissed. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, it's just a very simple thing to do. You do it at the beginning. But
dude, there was always that friend who would be like, what are you kidding? Some people only survive a car wreck because they were completely ejected from the car. And I was always like, yeah, that doesn't sound better.
Yeah,
go through the windshield and out of the car. That sounds like, that's like, I need that to happen to me so I can stay alive.
Yeah, some people always have a dumb shit reason. Like, I remember I said something on Twitter the other day about seeing somebody. One of my favorite things is when you drive by some guy on a bike and he's got like a super expensive bike and he's got all the spandex gear and like the fancy sunglasses specifically made for bicycle riding, and then they're not wearing a helmet, and you're kind of like, what the fuck are you spending your money on? Like, if you're riding a bike, wear a goddamn helmet. Like, I ride my bike.
That's, I want to be slippery like a seal. But I want to still die.
As soon as you say that, there's five people that are like, actually, if you're more likely to die from internal injuries on a bike.
Fucking worst.
And studies show that people pass closer to bikers that are wearing helmets.
Oh, the goddamn worst.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, I heard that if you get in a car accident with your seatbelt, you could actually get decapitated by the seatbelt. Then you got to go through your whole life without no head.
Yeah.
You remind me of how much I hate
bicycles. I'd rather die than go through life without a head.
I would be so embarrassed.
Yeah, everywhere I go, I'd be like, where can I put this? Oh, do you have a coat rack for heads?
You got a head rack in this?
You remind me of how much I hate cyclists on the internet, because they have a particular culture of like telling you that you're wrong about anything that comes to a bike. Like, like Sean Bradley was recently in a bicycle accident that left him paralyzed. And the entire cyclist Twitter said it was not a bicycle accident. He was hit by a car, and they should consider that a car accident. It wasn't the bicycle's fault. And I'm like, he's paralyzed. Why are we quibbling?
How's this helping?
How is this helping?
Who's this conversation helping?
But as
who's
soon as you
for?
Say, like
if I'm riding a horse and a plane crashes on me, do you say I died in a plane crash?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Oh, anyways, that's just, every community online is bad. Toxic fandoms all around. Yeah. So there's a brief funeral scene, there are actually two funerals going on simultaneously. There's Chrissy's funeral that's happening at the exact same time that Nucci Galtieri, Polly's mom, dies as well. And they hold the funeral on the same day, which is just bad planning, honestly. Mm-hmm. I feel like I would have coordinated.
Yeah.
When are you going to have your thing?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, when is the Moltisanti thing happening? You know, I wouldn't have, I don't know, unless is it like Italian custom to just do it after 3 days, or what's the...
No, it's the Jews that bury the dead right away, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, but it's like the level of mourning, like
Italians, we keep them around for a month and we prop them up at the table and stuff like that.
Yeah. We feed it spaghetti and then we bury it spaghetti with a belly full of spaghetti.
Yeah.
That way you get to heaven, you're nice and full.
Just because you're dead doesn't mean that you shouldn't eat.
Give him more meatballs. He's going to be in purgatory a long time.
You look like you lost weight from all that formaldehyde.
He's dead.
I just want to say, like, Tony is doing that thing. I watched the Netflix series, The Ultimatum, which is all about couples where they... they give their partner an ultimatum, like, either you got to marry me or we got to break up. And then there's like 10 of them. And the premise is that they all like date other people for like 3 weeks. And then at the end, they either have to, you know, pull the trigger on getting married or break up. And like the whole show is just all people that clearly hate their partner but don't have the balls to be the first one to say like, hey, we need to break up. And I feel like Tony is doing a version of that where it's like his emotions that he feels relief at Christopher dying are perfectly justified, but he can't stand the way he would see himself if he said that out loud. And so he's like trying to just do like the soft opening version of that where he like tries to get somebody else to admit to it first so that then he can then agree with it instead of just saying like, I feel a little relief, frankly, because this guy was a fuck up drug addict and he made a lot of problems for me.
Tony is saying that at the funeral, and he's just saying it like, first he says it to his entire crew when he's in bed. What he says is, oh, the baby seat was destroyed. That's his way of like justifying it. And then he says it to Carm right after that relief conversation.
The baby would have been mangled beyond recognition.
The baby would have exploded like a grape in a cannon.
And I had a sandwich in the car seat. You should have seen the sandwich. Yeah. All over the place.
You think that was bad? Caitlin's body would have been like that sandwich.
My own. There was braised beef all over the cabin.
What I'm saying is like babies is like a sandwich.
They're soft in the inside and the outside.
They need to be protected because they're full of soft juicy meat.
The blood would have been everywhere like Paddington eating jam. But yeah, he like tells the director of Cleaver. That's my favorite part. Is you're like, who's this Asian guy he's talking to?
The guy that they didn't let speak at his own premiere.
Yes, is the director of Cleaver, and he tells him this.
You know, that night, a tree limb came into the car window, completely destroyed the baby seat.
Tony, you guys are gonna hang in a while.
I love that he's just telling this rant, and once again, the guy doesn't have a single line. And at the exact same time, the Jasons are comforting AJ. So real quick tangent to get into AJ's storyline, and then we're back. AJ's storyline is pretty simple. At this point, he is kind of feeling better about the whole Blanca thing. I think he's on Lexapro. He's feeling good. He has new friends, both of those Jasons. And then he fucking is seeing a therapist who he likes. They have a they have a conversation about school.
Did you finally enroll?
I'm in a few classes. Unofficially, until my transcript clears from Ramapo. I'm beginning English. Oh, and I went to a class on the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard to pick up in the middle. I might take it next semester. I mean, it's so dicked up over there. And no one knows who started it.
Uh-oh. It's that time again where I ask our guests, who started the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? I'm just kidding.
No, man.
Oh, that was fun.
It was Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, he did it. He was the first one to go over there, and he's like, I'm going to do Sykes-Picot. All right, anyways, it's a very specific thing. So
he's like, Sykes! Yeah. You can have your land. Sykes!
Oh, man, what a nerdy joke. Okay, so AJ's feeling better. He's in a poetry class. He's learning about the material world. He's laughing with his friends at a kid who's, you know, who got his toes amputated due to an acid burn. And then he witnesses a hate crime. Like AJ is hanging with the Jasons. They're breaking bottles on the porch, doing like peak scumbag Goomba shit.
I like that the guy's like, how dare you call me that? I'm Somalian. And then they're like, oh, that's an even better hate crime.
Yeah.
Double hate crime.
Oh, we got one for Somalians too.
Yeah.
You're a terrorist. One of the Jasons doors a Somalian college student.
Such a good scene. When he just gets out of his car and immediately doors a biker.
Yeah, yeah. It was right after he says the line something like, "Hey, I got the steaks," or something. Something is like, "Hey, meat truck just arrived.
I got the venison steaks."
Oh, got his things over here.
Yeah. And so they get into a fight. These guys are calling him the N-word. He's like, oh, hell no. And then they just start
slowly becoming their fathers, bonding over meat and then racism.
Yeah. Mm. And AJ finds himself like basically helping these guys commit a hate crime. I mean, he's sitting back and just watching it, kind of like awestruck. And then he is back in therapy and he's very upset. And it's, again, just another amazing AJ kind of like mania scene where he's just back and forth where he's sad, he's happy, he's sad.
Yeah,
and,
I don't really get him. I don't really get him.
Well, he's pulling a Tony in this, which is that he can't actually say the thing that's bothering him. So he's got to like blame it on everything. Oh, you know, it's just I look around and the death of the American dream.
Right.
Like, no, that you witnessed a hate crime, but you don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, why don't
you take
some accountability, you little piece of shit.
Right. Yeah. At the very least, it's like be vulnerable enough to admit you're traumatized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's not. And it's a great scene.
He says, sorry.
Like, this is all something. I'm fucking laughing. Nobody takes even one second to think about what's really going on.
You sound depressed again.
I mean, how can anybody not be? You'd have to be fucking nuts not to be. I mean, you'd have to have your head wedged so far up your ass that all you could see is your own stupid face.
That's the one.
What specifically are you talking about?
I mean, everything is so fucked up. I mean, why can't we all just get along?
Oh, no, AJ. You little confused piece of shit.
Incredible.
Dude,
incredible.
I could listen to that 1,000 times and not understand what he's talking about.
I mean, it's just he's very clearly like he can't say he was a part of a hate crime because he feels bad. Again, it's about his self-image,
right?
And he doesn't want to say this to his therapist, but he is hinting at it with the what isn't that what Rodney King said after the trial?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's just very. Yeah. Oh,
I hate the. You need to have your head so far up your ass, all you see is your own face.
Yeah, your own stupid
see,
face.
Oh, is your where is your head? Is there a mirror inside yourself?
Yeah. Would you be seeing your face? I mean, you'd have to like have a mirror. You'd have to come out of your own mouth and see a mirror. Or right. maybe,
I mean, I don't think I heard one word in this episode after that because I was just thinking about
the mechanics of seeing your own face if your head's far enough up your ass.
Yeah. You would like, do you go through some kind of portal?
You turn into Thurman Merman where you're like, how would I drop myself on my own head?
Yeah. Damn it, are you fucking with me, kid?
Yeah. That's like a perfect like coke headline because I feel like people that are on coke. Like they can't think laterally enough to, you know, create a good metaphor, but they pick one metaphor and they just have to keep like doubling down on it. Like, oh, you would have to have your head examined. Oh, you would have to. And then he says like 5 more things that mean the exact same thing.
Yeah. You have to keep the logic going or else you lose the thread of your own anger, which I love.
This guy couldn't hit a broadside of a barn if his head was so far up his ass he could see his own face.
But he said you could get a better look at a T-bone steak if you stick your head up a bull's ass. But wait, how does this go?
You got to wake up pretty early in the morning to see my face in my ass.
I see my face up my own ass more times before 8 a.m. than most people.
A penny earned if you got your head in your ass too far to see the pennies that you have saved nor earned. Anyways. Hate crimes.
Anyway, what are we talking about?
So that's
people on stimulants just get lost in the forest of their own metaphors to the point that they completely lose the thread.
Yeah. So back to Tony's storyline. Wrapping it up, Tony is tired of having to pretend he's sad. So he sees Kelly, Chris's, you know, widow, breastfeeding a baby and immediately gets horny and then calls his Vegas connection to get a private jet to take him to Vegas. I love that that's the impetus, is he sees a baby drinking breast milk and he's just like,
I know a bro that's got some big tits too.
Yeah.
I can be a baby for a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, mama milk. And so he flies over to Vegas. He's, you know, doing his usual thing he's been doing all season, losing money at gambling. And then he goes to visit this, I think it's a prostitute slash Chris's ex Gumar, someone we've never seen before.
I think we have seen her before, didn't we?
No, I mean, I don't remember. I don't remember her.
Didn't Chrissy have a party with her like in Vegas, where he's like, oh those tits, Maron.
I don't remember that. But that
sounds like him.
It does sound like him. That's what Chrissy would say. Mm-hmm. But her name is Sonia in the episode. So maybe.
Oh, I guess, only one episode according to IMDb.
Yeah, I didn't recognize her, and she's particularly beautiful. I mean, she's a gorgeous person. And Tony goes to visit her to kind of tell her, like, hey, by the way, Chris is dead, or at least that's like the pretend reason. The real reason seems to be that he wants to fuck someone that Chrissy used to fuck. Because I think, like, he never got to do that, I think, is part of the, because there's two women in the series that Tony wanted to fuck but couldn't. Who fucked Chris? One was Adriana. The other was Juliana Margulies' character, Juliana Skiff. So I feel like he's like, Chris is dead. I really just want to get his sloppy seconds in remembrance.
To pay respect.
To pay respects, exactly. And then so Tony has sex with her. And I think the other reason that he came there was because he knew that Chris and her had done peyote before, and he really wanted to do peyote, which is such a random aside. I think he just wants to go on a vision quest. there's the baby. He wants to go on a vision quest with this beautiful woman, and an amazing thing happens, which is he takes peyote, and they both, they're high as shit, and they go to the casino floor, and Tony wins at roulette three times in a row.
He is the worst roulette player. He like never bets on like odd or even or like red or black. It's always
he
like,
just picks a number, and he's just like, you know, these
same principles as shoulders.
he picks 24 and he gets it twice. Mm-hmm. And he says the same principle as the solar system.
It's the same principle as the solar system.
24. Again.
He's dead.
What? Uh-huh. What?
And then he just starts laughing hysterically after he says he's dead. Like he realizes, this is the reason.
Yeah, he doesn't have to deal with that guy anymore.
He doesn't have to deal with that guy. Everything's all good. And there's a little bit more asbestos shit that happens, but it ends wonderfully. Tony and the lady, Sonia, are looking at the sunset while they're in the desert. And they have the most high on fucking psychedelics look ever. Like, you know, if you've ever taken psychedelics, you know that, like, glazed over, almost sunburnt feeling where you're flushed and you're like, why do I feel sunburnt? I've been inside all day. And then so you feel comfortable going to the middle of the desert. There's nothing like the desert in psychedelics. It's just they're made for each other. And he looks
at
the
sun. It's not like sensory overload. There's
it's clean and quiet. Mm-hmm. And there's like something about it is just peaceful. And also dead, which I feel like is something that Tony likes. So he looks at the sunset and it flashes, and then he just screams out, I get it.
I get it!
I get it! Said, I get it?
Said, I get it.
I thought he said, I did it.
Oh, no. He says,
no,
I get it.
No, he understands the universe now.
He understands the universe, dude. The sun flashed in his eye, and he saw the face of God, and he said, oh, and he probably doesn't know what he got, but he knows it's like a total psychedelic thing where you at some point just go like, oh man, I never thought about it, but like we're on the earth. Right. And like when you're thinking about that, when you're on psychedelics, that's the most profound shit you've ever fucking said. But then afterwards, you just being on earth doesn't feel as big as and as important. But
right. Where's all?
I do love that he at that moment was just like, I finally put all the pieces together. And
so happy for him.
And what he gets, it seems to be, is that all he had to do was murder his nephew.
Yeah.
And then everybody
gets comeuppance.
Yeah. Solved all his problems.
Yeah, it all worked out. And yeah, so that is the end of the episode. And I would have to say that if I were to give this episode a letter grade, and I could give it any grade, I think I'd give it a B+. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's tough to grade. We're in unprecedented Sopranos territory. We're tying up storylines. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff happening. We had a really excellent bookend to the Christopher storyline.
You're holding your baby right now, and this is the cutest shit I've ever seen.
The first thing he did was grab the microphone, and the second thing he did was grab the windscreen off of the microphone, and now he's back to grabbing the microphone, and I can't.
Could you just explain to him that plosives are no good for podcasts?
Yeah, tell him about hard peas.
Yeah, he's all about the hard peas.
I like that he's learning podcasting this early on.
But yeah, I think tough to grade, but I would have to give it a solid B+.
Solid B+. All right, that's a good grade. Mike Falzone, what would you give this episode if you had to?
You know, I had it at a B, and then I saw, you know, the part of sex where you finish at the end.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's my favorite part.
Tony did that so funny that it bumped it up to a B+. Oh,
the leg kick after he came.
He's like a little baby on his back. Yeah. Like just trying to, just having a great time looking at a mobile.
He's an overturned turtle just going, ugh! He comes straight gobble-ghoul in that scene. It is amazing.
It was very funny.
Thick ropes of mortadelle.
Yeah, very thick ropes.
He's also so good at having sex with all of his clothes on all the time.
Yeah. It is. It's impressive because I feel like, you know, I've never been of his size, but I imagine if I'm of that size, I'm like, it's a whole thing to take all my clothes off.
Yeah.
Pants are made with a
hole. I'll unbutton it, but that's about it.
Yeah. There's a hole for easy access.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a solid B+ episode of The Sopranos and a solid A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Mike Falzone.
Oh yeah, so good to be here. Oh, right on cue.
Mike, thank you so much for coming back on Pod Yourself a Gun.
I loved being here. I love you guys. This is thank you for giving me an excuse to watch the show.
Thank you for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet?
All over the internet. If you could spell Mike Falzone like it sounds, then you could find me on the internet. Yeah. And I'd love for you to come out to a crowd work show.
Just imagine you're seeing a bad calzone and you're like, I give this calzone an F. And then
I don't like that. I don't like that joke and I'm offended by it. But if you want to come out to my crowd work show, it's the first Friday of every month at the Hollywood Improv. Matt, you've been on it. You did a great job.
I had a great time. It's really fun. Check out Surrounded. Check out Dynamic Banter. Check out everything Mike Falzone does. Please, thank you, buddy. Please. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I love you guys very much.
Love you too, doggy.
Love you.
Big yawn from Brett.
Vince, we gotta do the finish up the ending call outs.
I'm just
you
running
do it
out
with
of,
the baby.
I'm running out of things to give him to hold to
give him the microphone.
He's at the baby stage where you just have to give him different things to hold to keep him from being upset.
He's doing great.
All right. Patreon.com/Frogcast for all of the bonus episodes. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we only have one shout out.
Oh, thank God. Week. I mean, not thank God. Everybody should.
No, we need more shout outs, but you are holding a baby currently.
Yeah.
Okay, it is Sean Slattery.
Oh, wow. What's the name of John Slattery's character in Mad Men?
Sterling Cooper.
We're gonna call this guy the Silver Fox.
Silver Fox. All right, I like it.
John Slattery, he's a Silver Fox.
He's Sterling, right?
That's which is also silver.
That's also silver. So that is not enough $8 patrons for this week. And I'm deeply ashamed of my piggies for not upping to $8. And so please do that. Patreon.com/Fraudcast. Fraudcast@gmail.com for all of your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Hello. You can't dump asbestos in there. First, you gotta pay off Brooklyn. Pay off Ilia Tardo. Come on, Tone. I know you. He's acting strange. He looks like he's on cocaine. Relax. He just needs to change the station first. To the Departed soundtrack. Tony yells and Chrissy swerves. There is no pain, just internal bleeding. A distant headlight on the horizon. Tony almost dials 911. Chrissy looks high, and Tony, he hangs up. Chrissy was like his child till he wrote Cleaver.
about the Sopranos, and I can't be wrong, cause it's the greatest band in the world, bitch. Pretty good, solid B plus band, masturbate with hands, sucking on my dick till my dick makes some plans. I'm gonna have a baby, bitch, little girl, she's gonna rock my entire fucking world. I'm gonna train her to be a podcaster, and then we will get her a Patreon. Oh, yeah, bitch. Suck on my dick. Put my dick in my dick in your dick in your dick, and then I put my dick inside of my dick. Why do this? It's just because it's fun. But for me only. I don't even know if people can hear me right now. Yo, what's up? My name is Roger Waters. I play the bass and I write the songs. And David Gilmour sings the songs. And then we fight all career long. I'm gonna talk about Israel. And David just gonna play songs I wrote. And both of them together make a great band, but both of them separately they're fine. I don't know, man.
I wish they would be friends, though. I wish they would just make up, because, like, motherfucker, you guys are old. What, are you going to fight forever?
All right.